Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On Sunday, May 18th, President Joe Biden announced that he was diagnosed with an aggressive form of prostate cancer that has spread to his bones. Since then, the pundit class has asked how Biden could have received such an alarming late-stage diagnosis, given that he has access to the best doctors in the world. And then you've got RFK Jr. supporters who are spreading dangerous and unfounded claims about turbo cancers caused by the COVID vaccine. Well, my dad was also diagnosed with an aggressive form of prostate cancer that spread to his bones this time last year. We lost him in early January after going through a rigorous treatment of chemotherapy and radiation. That is how aggressive his cancer was. According to the American Cancer Society, about 1 in 8 men will be diagnosed with prostate cancer in their lifetime. In 2025, an estimated 313,780 new cases of prostate cancer will be diagnosed. 35,770 men will die from the disease in the U.S. According to the CDC, 97% of prostate cancer patients will not die from their cancer 5 years after being diagnosed. But for the 8% that are diagnosed at a late stage, the 5-year survival rate plummets to just 36%. So how can these aggressive forms of prostate cancer be caught sooner? Can they? How should screening guidelines evolve, particularly in a country growing increasingly hostile to and skeptical of established medical science? President Biden's diagnosis comes as the Trump administration has cut cancer research by 31% in the first 3 months of the year, according to a recent Senate report called by Senator Bernie Sanders. On our recent show about this, we learned that these cuts have already had devastated promising cancer research. Today, we're joined by two doctors to talk about all of this. Dr. Mark Garnick is a renowned expert in medical oncology and urologic cancer at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston and professor of medicine at the Harvard Medical School. Dr. Garnick has dedicated his career to the development of new therapies for the treatment of prostate cancer. He's founded the Hershey Family Foundation for Prostate Cancer Research and has served as special advisor to the FDA. Dr. Garnick is also editor-in-chief of the HMS Report on Prostate Diseases. Hi, Dr. Garnick. Thank you so much for your work and thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much. Good morning.
Good morning. Dr. Benjamin Mazur is a board-certified anatomic and clinical pathologist and assistant professor of pathology at Johns Hopkins University. Dr. Mazur has expertise in cancer diagnosis and screening, with a special interest in gastrointestinal pathology, general surgical pathology, and health policy. Dr. Mazur has been published in many medical journals and in media outlets like The Atlantic and The New York Times. Hi, Dr. Mazur. Thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Great to be here. Thanks.
Great to have you. Dr. Garnick, let's start with you. Can you just tell us what kind of aggressive cancer was President Biden diagnosed with?
He was diagnosed with what we call prostate adenocarcinoma, which is a cancer of the glands of the prostate, which seems to have left or metastasized or spread from the prostate gland to a very common area in prostate cancer patients, and that is spread to the bony areas. We don't know exactly which anatomic areas of his skeletal system or his bones were affected, so that will become very important as we discuss his management. But he has a prostate cancer that was called a so-called Gleason 9. Dr. Mays will certainly expand on that. And that cancer had spread beyond the confines of the prostate gland into areas such as the bone.
Unfortunately, I have learned a lot about cancer because of my dad's diagnosis last year. And it was very disturbing to see so many people come out and express skepticism because Biden was diagnosed at such a late stage. You both have talked about this. You both have heard these people say, how could this be possible given that he has access to some of the best doctors in the world? Dr. Garnick, my dad had really bad hip problems. He actually fell and called 911. And that's how he found out he had such an aggressive form of late stage prostate cancer. So sadly, this is not uncommon. Can you talk more about that, Dr. Garnick?
Surely. So the guidelines for primary care physicians in terms of when should they talk about PSA testing, and PSA is a blood test that can potentially indicate the presence of prostate cancer. Unfortunately, the PSA test can also be associated with other non-cancerous conditions, such as enlargement of the prostate gland as men get older, or infections of the prostate gland. And there have been a whole series of studies essentially asking the question, does the use of routine PSA testing and the subsequent evaluation of an abnormal value that leads to a biopsy, which confirms the diagnosis of prostate cancer, actually improve the overall outcomes of patients? And we look at the overall outcomes of patients in terms of, do they live longer if they've been screened? Do they decrease the likelihood of dying of prostate cancer if they've been screened with a PSA test compared to patients who have not undergone such testing? And a whole series of studies have looked at this particular question. And based upon a vast number of studies, the information suggests that if PSA testing is going to be beneficial, it's usually for those men between the ages of 50 or 55 and 69 or 70. After the age of 70, because there are competing causes of death, the likelihood of a PSA test, which leads to a diagnosis of prostate cancer, actually improving the outcomes of that patient, are actually associated with more harms than benefits. So the United States Preventive Services Task Force in 2018 essentially said a patient should have a discussion with his physician about the pros and cons of PSA testing and have the patient make that determination. After the age of 70, based upon a vast amount of information and data, it was suggested that routine PSA screening or PSA testing actually results in more harm than benefit. And so consequently, from what I understand from the news releases of President Biden, he stopped getting PSA testing sometime in his 70s and was not part of his routine blood studies when he went in for a periodic physical examination or an annual examination. So, and by the same token, PSA is not a perfect test. Patients can have low values of PSA, no symptoms whatsoever, and they can present with advanced forms of prostate cancer. That's cancer which is spread either to the bones or to the draining lymph nodes in the pelvis or other portions of the body. So it's not uncommon at all for a patient who's completely asymptomatic, who happens to have either some urinary symptoms or an abnormal digital examination in which the physician inserts a finger to feel the prostate gland, who then has a biopsy, that can have advanced forms of prostate cancer despite minimal to no symptoms whatsoever. Mm. So.
And that is the key point, especially as people are spreading so much misinformation out there, which is very dangerous. Dr. Mazur, what would you like to add about President Biden's diagnosis? You wrote a piece in The Atlantic. The Maha crowd is already questioning Biden's cancer diagnosis. I mean, at a time when, you know, more people are living with cancer, but more people are being diagnosed with cancer, it's so important to get factual information out there.
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, this the rumors and inaccuracies that are being spread is just a further extension of the politicization of medicine that happened during the pandemic and has really accelerated, especially with the current healthcare leadership in this country. And so it's sort of a mix of distrust and paranoia on the political side, you know, people that had issues with Biden politically, combined with misinformation and just genuine misunderstanding on the medical side that makes, you know, people suspicious of what doctors are saying, you know, and calling the medical system untrustworthy and political. So, you know, I mean, there's been a series of accusations leveled at President Biden that he was just covering up the diagnosis. He knew about it, you know, that it wouldn't make sense for this to get missed, as we've just talked about, that can completely happen, or that it's even due to a vaccine side effect. You know, President Biden was a big advocate of the COVID vaccine, and there's been this longstanding misinformation that's been spread about the vaccine, in no small part by RFK Jr.'s organization and him personally. And so people were primed to spread more information when this diagnosis was made.
Dr. Mazur, in your Atlantic piece, you write that an 82-year-old man who had aged out of prostate cancer screening tests has been found to have an advanced malignancy should not be surprising. In my experience as a doctor who diagnoses cancer, many tumors are discovered out of the blue. Prostate cancer in particular may not become apparent until an individual goes to his doctor with a minor complaint, in Biden's case, urinary symptoms, according to the announcement, only to have further testing discover the worst. And in my dad's case, it was a horrible hip pain, and that's how they found that he had prostate cancer that spread to his bones. So can you please talk about this, given that you are a doctor who diagnoses cancer?
Yeah, as Dr. Garnick alluded to, you know, most prostate cancer diagnoses today are diagnosed through the PSA screening test. So, you know, apparently healthy men come in to their doctor and get this blood test, and if the result is abnormal, they get further workup, which may lead to a diagnosis. But that test has its problems because prostate cancer, in the sense of having these malignant cells located within the prostate, is extraordinarily common. Pathologists, you know, as they started seeing more and more of this disease through PSA screening, realized that it's incredibly common to develop a prostate cancer and to never develop symptoms, or to never have it spread. You know, a series of autopsy studies were done a long time ago that showed that if you looked at the prostate of men who died of completely unrelated conditions, you could often find kind of low-grade forms of prostate cancer. And so it sort of completely changed the paradigm from a both pathologic point of view and a clinical point of view, that we're trying to avoid finding some cancers while looking for the more aggressive ones to be able to treat them. And so it's put doctors of all sorts in a tough position, that we don't want to overtest and overscreen and look too much for prostate cancer, because we're going to find people who have what is essentially harmless disease that I can identify under the microscope, but is never going to cause them any symptoms, is never going to spread beyond the prostate, versus the kind of disease that it sounds like your father had and the President Biden has. And we're really not so amazing yet at sorting out one from the other. We use clues under the microscope to figure out which are the cancers that need to be treated. That's what I do on a daily basis. And we've more incorporated MRI imaging as a kind of advanced imaging technique to help sort this out too. I'm sure Dr. Garnick can touch on that. But it's not a solved problem in the sense of figuring out exactly which cancers need to be treated and the best way to go about finding them before they spread without hurting other people.
Well, today we are talking about President Biden's aggressive prostate cancer diagnosis. We're talking about the facts around testing and treatment. And if you have any questions, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. There is so much health misinformation now out there coming from the highest levels of government, unfortunately. And so it is so important to get the facts out. And I mean, we're doing this health series because of what happened to my dad, but also because of this misinformation. And you know, you got to feel for health professionals, because cancer rates are on the rise, chronic disease is on the rise, people are very skeptical. And there are a lot of questions that need to be asked about why this is happening in this country, but we really have to talk about the facts. So you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Dr. Benjamin Mazur is a board-certified anatomic and clinical pathologist and assistant professor of pathology at Johns Hopkins University. Dr. Mark Garnick is a renowned expert in medical oncology and urologic cancer at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston. He's also a professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. Dr. Garnick, so my dad was 74. President Biden is 82. What would you say to men who are listening right now, or people who have men in their lives over 70? How should they be thinking about screening guidelines?
Yeah, I think it's really an individual choice for the patient to bring up his desires about screening, and for him to engage in a conversation with his physician about the pros and cons of PSA-based screening. I think it's important to recognize that in the past, before we had the results of large studies that looked at the efficacy of screening, a patient would have a routine PSA value, and if it was elevated, that patient would be whisked off for a biopsy, and if a cancer was found, regardless of the type of cancer, that patient would be treated with radiation therapy or surgical removal of the prostate gland. And so that resulted in a lot of overtreatment, as opposed to patients that didn't have any such testing. And when you look at the overall survival, there was virtually very, very little difference between those that were tested and those that were not tested. For the patient in his 70s and 80s, I think there are several important aspects. If the patient has an expected lifespan of 10 to 15 years, I think it's perfectly reasonable to go outside of guidelines and for that patient to engage in a shared decision discussion with his physician about the pros and cons of PSA-based testing. If the patient has other medical illnesses, such as emphysema, or has had another type of cancer, or has kidney disease, or diabetes, or hypertension, or coronary disease, heart disease, and the expected life expectancy is less than 10 years, the likelihood of screening and having that patient benefit from screening is really quite small, because the benefit of screening usually takes anywhere between 10, 15, or 20 years to manifest itself. So if the patient is vigorous and has an expected lifespan of 10 to 15 years, I think it's perfectly reasonable for the patient to bring up the discussion about whether he should be screened or not. And then the physician can go through the pros and cons of screening. Please recognize that these treatments of prostate cancer include significant lifestyle changes and life effects. Radical prostatectomy, which is surgical removal of the prostate gland, can result in urinary incontinence as well as erectile dysfunction, as well as an operative side effects from the operation itself. Radiation therapy, despite the tremendous advances in radiation, that radiation can affect the lower portions of the bladder, that can lead to urinary difficulties, and over a period of time can also affect the front portion of the rectum, leading to some bowel difficulties. So these side effects, because of the way the treatments are given or the surgical removal, can have significant impacts on the patient's quality of life. So those are the sorts of things that go into a decision making. And I think the important aspect is, as Dr. Mazur said, the pathology has been so critically important in helping identify those patients who select to get PSA tested, who end up having prostate cancer, and then the pathologist provides critical information, not only in what the cancer looks like under the microscope, but we can also do some genomic or genetic testing on that cancer, and we can try to decide, is this person's cancer going to behave like a lion or like a lamb? And if we think the patient's cancer is going to behave like a lamb and really sort of be indolent and not really do much during the patient's lifetime, we end up watching those patients over a long period of time in something that we call active surveillance. So it's important for the audience to recognize that prostate cancer is not one disease. It has many, many different manifestations, from the cancers that we actually prefer not to have diagnosed because it's unlikely the patient will ever suffer symptoms from the prostate cancer, as well as cancers that definitely need treatment, which are the more aggressive cancers. And it's not as though one cancer transforms into another, but rather the patient's cancer is actually born with whether it's going to be an aggressive cancer or a more indolent cancer. So those are the discussions that would take place in someone in their 70s and 80s. But it's got to be recognized that that from a primary care physician's perspective, the guidelines, which we're still waiting to be updated since the last ones were updated in 2018, and we generally anticipate guidelines coming up every 5 to 6 years, we anticipate new guidelines being offered very, very soon. And so the current guidelines are not to offer PSA testing for men over the age of 70, except for the caveats that I mentioned.
Dr. Mazur, what would you like to add?
Yeah, I think there's, putting aside the misinformation for a moment, I think there's just a widespread, like, genuine misunderstanding about the ability of screening in general and other early detection methods to catch every cancer before they spread or before they start to cause harm. I think it comes from a place of enormous optimism that we think that if we find a cancer early enough, we can always treat it. And because we've made some advances in this area, you know, colonoscopy, breast cancer screening, and to a smaller extent, PSA screening and some other things do sometimes catch cancers before they spread and help save people's lives. But there's something about the biology of the cancer. I think Dr. Garnick touched on it. Some cancers are destined to be incredibly aggressive. And even if we do all our standard screening tests, may in fact spread before they could be identified or treated. Cancer cells are obviously microscopic, and single cancer cells can spread throughout the body undetected. And so even if we try to treat a cancer early by removing the prostate, giving radiation, or some other cancer doing something else, the cat may be out of the bag. It may be biologically such an aggressive tumor that there are already microscopic cancer cells that we just can't catch in time. And I think that's hard for people to accept. We think that if everything caught early enough can be treated, and I wish that were the case, but it's not.
Yeah, Dr. Mazur, I just wanted to mention one thing, Dr. Garnick, because it's, for someone who doesn't have experience in this, it's so easy just to throw out lies and misinformation or question things. But I remember the day when I had my dad and I had a Zoom appointment with his doctor, and he said that the tumors were shrinking, and we were just so excited. I called my Kevin at the station and I said, "You've got to play a rebroadcast. My dad's tumors are shrinking. I have to take him out to breakfast." And the doctor said, "This is really good news, but it really could come back quickly." And that's exactly what happened. The tumors just started growing so aggressively. And Dr. Garnick, this is the kind of thing that, you just don't know unless you have personal experience with it.
Yeah, it's very devastating to be a family member or a patient that's been told that they've got a diagnosis of cancer. But I also think it's very important for the public to recognize the limitations, as Dr. Mazur indicated, about our screening tests. There was a recently published study of over 2 million patients who had undergone screening tests, whether it be breast cancer screening, lung cancer, colorectal cancer screening, prostate cancer screening, and cervical cancer screening. And really, and the analysis of this so-called meta-analysis, which looked at multiple studies that included over 2.1 million patients, indicated that the only place where survival was improved by screening was actually sigmoidoscopy for colon cancer. And so sigmoidoscopy is which a small tube is inserted into the rectum and goes up into the lower portion of the bowel that is less invasive than colonoscopy. So our expectations that, quote-unquote, screening tests detect cancers early, it's actually very, very difficult to prove that. And by the time we are able to diagnose a cancer, either clinically or by X-ray studies that would lead to a biopsy that Dr. Mays would be able to diagnose under the microscope, that cancer oftentimes has been present for long periods of time before either any clinical manifestations, any clinical symptoms, or any X-ray studies can actually show the cancer, which is a very sobering consideration.
It's very sobering. And again, it just bears repeating. In the New York Times, Dr. Judd Mowall, a urologist and prostate specialist at Duke University, said, while everyone's talking about conspiracies and cover-ups, the way that President Biden was diagnosed could be considered perfectly reasonable and not medically unusual. So it's just so important to get these facts out at a time when misinformation is rampant in this country. Today, we're talking about President Biden's aggressive prostate cancer diagnosis. We're talking about the facts around screening and treatment. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. If you have any questions or comments about this, you can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Dr. Mark Garnick is a renowned expert in medical oncology and urologic cancer at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston and professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. Dr. Benjamin Mazur is a board-certified anatomic and clinical pathologist and assistant professor of pathology at Johns Hopkins University. Dr. Mazur has expertise in cancer diagnosis and screening. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. If you have any show ideas around health, we would love to hear from you. We're going to continue doing health shows for the rest of the year. You can email ideas, yourcall@kalw.org. Tomorrow, we will mark the five-year anniversary of the death of George Floyd by speaking with Robert Samuels, author of His Name is George Floyd, One Man's Life and Struggle for Racial Justice. And then on Thursday, we will talk about really incredible Washington Post reporting on Indian boarding schools. Today, we are talking about President Biden's aggressive stage 4 prostate cancer diagnosis. We're talking about the facts around screening and treatment, and you can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we're joined by Dr. Benjamin Mazur, board-certified anatomic and clinical pathologist and assistant professor of pathology at Johns Hopkins University. Dr. Mark Garnick is a renowned expert in medical oncology and urologic cancer at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston and professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. And let's hear from a caller. Let's go to Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg. Welcome to the show.
Hello. I think I was very concerned when I heard that maybe early detection might not be the cure-all that people would like it to be. But the reason I call was because in the past, and I mean distant past, you used to be able to go in for a complete physical. And, you know, I mean, from top to bottom, from head to feet. And this would include like a digital exam, a rectal exam. And I have no idea why that is no longer available, because now when I go to the doctor for my annual visit, it's a wellness visit where the doctor doesn't necessarily touch your body. You just talk about health issues. And that happened recently. So I don't know if they would have any comment on the benefit of a complete physical, which might include, say, a sigmoidoscopy. So I have no idea why that has happened, and I'd just like to hear what they think about whether or not that would be valuable.
Okay, thank you, Greg. Stay on the line in case you have a follow-up. Dr. Garnick, do you want to take that first?
Yes. Yeah. So I think Dr. Mazur and I were probably trained in different eras. The physical examination to me is one of the most important components of medical education and being a physician. I've been a physician for close to 50 years. So I routinely do digital examinations on my patients. When I follow them, I routinely do physical examinations. But over the past decades, because of the major advances in imaging, many physicians have decreased, lessened the importance of doing a physical examination, especially the digital rectal examination. And but to be objective, the digital rectal examination as a screening test for prostate cancer is relatively deficient in terms of its effectiveness. However, the digital rectal examination plus a PSA can sometimes identify cancers at an earlier stage. However, whether or not the identification of that cancer leads to benefits, as we've been discussing, is a subject of great controversy. But there's no question that physical examinations can pick up abnormalities. But I understand the caller's concern that it's not often done as part of routine physical examinations today.
Dr. Mazur, what would you like to add?
Yeah, Dr. Garnick is right. You know, I practice laboratory medicine, and one of the reasons I went into this field is because, you know, lab testing has become such an integral part of day-to-day medical care for just about every condition. Lab tests are replacing, for better or worse, sometimes routine, you know, old-fashioned methods. And so I think doctors think they can always rely on a blood test or some other kind of test or imaging test, some advanced technology to get an answer. And of course, a lot of times that's true, but sometimes good old-fashioned examination still works. I think there are also kind of larger systemic factors. You know, I mean, every primary care family doctor I know, I mean, they love their job. They love getting to know patients and kind of taking care of the whole person. That's why people go into family medicine. You know, it's not for the money. And I think there's so much pressure now in primary care to meet so many metrics. And a lot of those metrics are involving counseling patients. So one, you know, offering them screening tests and other things, not just for cancer, but for cholesterol and other and heart disease and things like that, to give them guidance on lifestyle factors, and then to cover just all sorts of things that are important for billing and for other compliance and safety issues. And it's just overwhelming for doctors. You know, in one small visit, they have to check all these boxes to be considered a sort of competent, adequate physician to get reimbursed by the insurance company. It's just impossible to do everything at once. And I think the physical exam is what's fallen by the wayside for that. And so that's a real shame too. And I, yeah.
Wow. That is so interesting when you think about how many components are involved in this. So if you go to the doctor and you're not given a physical exam, would you recommend asking for one?
It depends if the physician can do a physical examination. I'm actually surprised at how few physicians actually know how to do a good digital examination. And actually, I teach physical diagnosis at Harvard Medical School, and I think, you know, there's got to be increased emphasis on the physical examination for first and second year medical students, which hopefully is gaining more importance today.
Wow.
But it's been left by the wayside. Because
So what?
and actually now for some physicians carry handheld ultrasound examinations, so they can do an abdominal examination or an examination of the chest using a handheld ultrasound or a sound wave test. So the emphasis on doing physical examinations is decreasing, unfortunately.
What would you advise patients to do if they get a very short wellness visit and they're just asked questions, but they think something might be going on, or they want reassurance that nothing is wrong, Dr. Garnick?
Well, it's tough to reassure a patient that nothing is going wrong without doing exhaustive examinations and taking detailed histories. But, you know, the routine annual physical examination checks for big ticket items such as blood pressure, cholesterol, blood sugar, weight, those sorts of components. And the if a patient requests a specific examination or a specific test, my feeling is that the physician should comply with that.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Greg. We will definitely continue to do shows about these issues. Oh, did you want to jump in, Dr. Mazur?
No, that's me, Rose.
Oh, Greg, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted a couple of comments. One is today, appointments are so limited in terms of the amount of time that a doctor has that to do a complete examination, given today's restrictions on the amount of time they have, is, well, that's one impediment with regard to the physical exam. Secondly, I did have to go in for a urological problem at Stanford a couple of years ago, and a doctor did do a digital exam, and he just reported to me. I asked him how my prostate felt. He said, you know, I've felt a lot of cancerous growths on prostates, and you do not have prostate cancer. So, I mean, that was reassuring, and I just I think that, you know, the time constraints make things incredibly difficult now for doctors to do a complete and thorough exam. And I will say this with regard to asking a doctor to do something. I did make it very explicit to this one doctor that I would like to have them go over me much more thoroughly, and it just didn't happen. I mean, I don't know why, but it just didn't happen. So there's issues there.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to recognize that the majority of patients who are diagnosed with prostate cancer are usually done with a PSA-based test, and the digital examination is completely normal or negative. And in fact, patients can have the type of cancer that President Biden has, a Gleason 9 cancer, a very high-grade cancer, and the digital examination can actually be completely normal or just minimally abnormal. And that's why I said the digital examination is not a good screening test for prostate cancer, but you can find some abnormalities that can sometimes lead you to make the diagnosis. But most patients with prostate cancer have what we call as a PSA-based screening cancer, in which the digital examination is completely normal.
Well, thank you again, Greg. We will definitely do shows about what's happening with the healthcare system, how hard it is to even get appointments, and then that the appointments are very short usually. So we'll definitely talk about that on a future show, Greg. We have an email from a listener who says, thank you for covering this issue. I am a 70-year-old Black male that has experienced PSA test results over 9 for the last year. I have no other typical symptoms. An MRI was negative. My urologist performed a biopsy that was also negative, and via digital exam says that my prostate is actually smaller than usual. Should I be concerned that there is a cancer that is being missed? Dr. Garnick, do you want to take that first?
Sure. So, there's no question that the incidence of prostate cancer in African-American males is the highest in the world. And when there's less access to healthcare systems, the outcomes of Black patients with prostate cancer are less favorable than they are in non-Black patients. So it's also very important to recognize that in 2012, when the task force gave guidelines, they gave PSA testing in 2012 a D recommendation, meaning that the harms of PSA testing, regardless of age, race, or family history. So, and people questioned the task force's recommendation, said, well, how can you possibly not recommend PSA-based testing if the patient has a strong family history of prostate cancer, or if the patient is African-American? And the answer was that we did not want to disproportionately disadvantage those particular patient populations, because there was no evidence that PSA-based screening actually improved overall survival or lessened the likelihood of patients dying of prostate cancer. For an African-American male, the guidelines based today basically say that those patients should be screened at an earlier age, and even earlier if they have a family history of prostate cancer, because of the increased incidence of prostate cancer in African-American men. But if a patient has had a negative biopsy, a negative MRI, a PSA testing which is not abnormal, and a normal digital examination, it would be highly unlikely for that patient to be harboring prostate cancer at this point of time. However, that doesn't mean that prostate cancer can't develop at some later point in time.
So what should this listener do, given that he is 70 years old? What would you recommend?
I would recommend the most important thing is, if the patient has a family history, he should continue to be evaluated. If the patient has no family history of prostate cancer, then he would fall within the guidelines and actually exceeds the guidelines because he's had a prostate biopsy and a prostate MRI. The guidelines really are applying to individuals that have not had any PSA testing or an MRI evaluation of the prostate gland or a digital examination, and certainly not a biopsy.
So I would say that
he's in pretty good shape right now.
And Dr. Mazur, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I think it's important to understand how the prostate biopsy process works and why cancer can be missed even with a negative biopsy. This is not meant to be alarming or to say that this is highly likely, just that this is how these things can occur is, the prostate gland is kind of very big and the cancer can develop at different sites of it. And so what we do is we do a series of needles inserted into the prostate at somewhat random locations. We're not always targeting a specific area unless there's an MRI being done. And so you're only seeing a very small part of the prostate in that biopsy sample. And so, you're going through different angles of the prostate, and just by pure chance, you could miss where the actual cancer is being harbored. And so, we like to think of things as really definitive, and biopsy and pathology is thought of as the most definitive diagnostic technique, which is one reason I love it as a profession. But the truth is it's sampling that can be the issue, meaning you don't actually pick up those cancer cells in that needle when you collect the specimen. Because of this kind of random sampling technique, it just can be missed by pure chance, nothing to do with, error or lack of skill. And then the other way cancers can be missed, the less common way, is a sort of diagnostic mistake or confusion that happens on the pathology side. Pathology is still a very manual thing that gets done, where a pathologist looks at cells under the microscope and makes its determination, is this benign, is this malignant, am I not sure? And so as this human endeavor, pathologists are capable of making mistakes, or a case can be especially challenging and different pathologists may actually disagree on whether or not something is cancer, which sounds kind of crazy, I think, to the average person, but it doesn't necessarily mean something went wrong, but that can be very alarming for people. And so another thing you can do if there's any concern on your doctor's side or something is have the biopsy slides be read by a second pathologist, just to see if their interpretation matches the first pathologist, because there are occasionally these diagnostic discordances. It's not extremely common, especially when it's called benign, but it does occur a couple percent of the time.
If I can just add one or two things to that, sure. That discussion. So it's also important that we don't want to diagnose low grade or what we call grade group one or Gleason 6 cancers as opposed to the Gleason 9 cancers. And so there's actually a movement afoot that if a patient has an elevated PSA and their MRI of the prostate gland is completely normal or negative, there are some institutions, and this is very common in Europe, that patient doesn't even undergo a prostate biopsy. In this country, even with a negative MRI and an elevated PSA, many institutions will still consider doing a prostate biopsy, but then those patients can be followed with an MRI. The MRI is more likely to identify as an abnormality a higher level or a more aggressive cancer than the cancers that are the Gleason, the lower grade Gleason cancers. So I think with a negative MRI, there may be cancer lurking, there's no question, but oftentimes we don't even want to find those cancers because the likelihood of that cancer ever becoming clinically manifest during the patient's lifetime, it's not zero, but it's actually pretty low.
All right, well, thank you again.
There are also urinary-based tests that can be done to identify the potential presence of not only cancer itself, but also the potential presence of higher grade cancers. And those are some newly evaluated urinary-based tests that look at specific gene products of the prostate cancer that's excreted into the urine after a digital examination.
Well, I hope those answers really help you, and thank you so much for writing in. Today, we are talking about President Biden's aggressive prostate cancer diagnosis. We're talking about the facts of screening and treatment, given that there is a lot of misinformation out there. Today, we're joined by Dr. Mark Garnick, renowned expert in medical oncology and urologic cancer at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center and professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. Dr. Benjamin Mazur is a board-certified anatomic and clinical pathologist and assistant professor of pathology at Johns Hopkins University. Let's go next to Jonathan in San Francisco. Hi, Jonathan. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I agree with most everything that was said by the two doctors there, but even with a digital exam followed by a PSA, followed by a urinalysis, some things still slip by. And I was happy to hear that you shouldn't treat any individual procedure as the gold standard for having or not having a disease process taking place. And in my case, I even got put on a, because all those things were negative, including a negative culture, but I got put on a very strong, I think it's called sulfamethoxazole. And after the first time in the 50 years, I made two tours of Vietnam. I immediately started having prostate problems within a year after leaving there. And I was right there in the middle of Agent Orange, spring in Da Nang. And then I was on a carrier, but that was also in the same exact area, and it had affected my heart. But, you know, I went in and on an emergency basis got given that medication. And even though I was negative on all three things, the medication was wonderful, but it's a very strong, broad-spectrum antibiotic. But the pain was a feeling of incredible inflammation. I mean, it feels like you're being poked from the bottom with a broom handle between just right on. And it's, you can't sit down, can't walk. And you just got blown off. Well, you have a return appointment in 5 weeks. You can wait till then. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, I came in here with pain to begin with, and I got put on a medication. No, you can't, because of the strength of it, be given again. But there normally is indicative of something else that's going on. Maybe not even the prostate. It might be something else that's affecting or giving that referred pain to the prostate. But the thing is, it's really hard when you're a patient and you're not feeling well, and then you have to turn around and advocate for yourself.
Right.
And I was told, I talked to a doctor. This was a nurse practitioner that dealt with me. I talked to you and said, well, we'll be sure to call you next week. Well, last week came and gone. So it's like you have to be your own advocate, despite I was just not diagnosed with not having a skin cancer, and I had to go to another hospital, and they had me in within 2 weeks under the surgeon's knife doing a Mohs technique to get rid of that cancer. But another doctor, the head of the department, said, you absolutely don't have one. And another doctor had told me that I had nothing but hemorrhoids. And it turned out when I was dealing the same way with a lot of pain, went to the clinic. I worked at the VA hospital itself, happened to see a doctor who used a scope. He goes, my God, you don't have varicose veins. You've got a polyp here the size of a large marble. And then I needed surgical intervention. So it's, what do you do when you keep on getting stonewalled? And, you know, I've gone through general college chemistry. I've got a master's degree.
Jonathan, I'm so sorry to cut you off, but we only have 2 minutes left, and I'm so sorry about what you've been through. Thank you for calling with your story. Dr. Mazur, I'm sure other people can relate. Jonathan is right. You have to have an advocate. I keep thinking about just how much work it took to help my dad, and what if he didn't have me or my brother? People who do not have advocates. I wish we had advocates for everyone, because it's so hard to navigate the system on your own. And what are your thoughts about what Jonathan just explained there?
Yeah, it can be absolutely overwhelming. You know, the amount of information you can get in medicine nowadays, and actually, patients have more and more direct access to their medical records, that most people can just get all their information online, both what the doctors are writing in the notes, all their lab tests, biopsy results, imaging results. And so they have direct access to even more information. And that is that's something that the healthcare system hasn't quite figured out yet. You know, a lot of the cancer diagnoses I give, the patient is the first person to read that report, not the doctor. And it's a good thing that patients are empowered to access this, but these reports are technical. They're written for other doctors. And of course, it's an extremely emotional thing for the patient. You know, I mean, you're getting a serious diagnosis. And so you're both very emotional and confused because you're not in a position to be understanding it by yourself. And so we haven't really solved this problem yet, but it requires, a lot of help, a lot of proactivity, and hopefully we'll develop more systems in place to guide patients. But it's an unsolved problem, I think. That's my opinion.
Yeah, Dr. Garnick, we have about a minute left.
Yeah, so I just two comments and then one other comment. The patient that just called in, the veterans who have served in Vietnam should be aware that there is a definite association of Agent Orange with the development of prostate cancer, and you've got to advocate for yourself if you're in that situation and to get the benefits from the VA. And what the patient was describing was, you know, symptomatic prostatitis or inflammation of the prostate, which is a chronic ongoing problem. And we can talk about that at some later point. But I would like at some point, and not necessarily now, to go through the advanced treatments that President Biden is likely to receive, and to the point that he has a very, very excellent prognosis given the advances in the types of treatment he's likely to receive. And maybe that could be a subject for a subsequent discussion on this channel.
Yes, we would definitely love to have you both back to talk about this. And again, Jonathan, sending you our best wishes and thank you for sharing your story with us. I wanted to read one more email from a listener who says, "While I think early detection is the key, there may be limits to it. I was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma at stage 3 and then a recurrence at stage 4. Both times I felt like there was some blame toward me. There was an assumption that if only I had been checked earlier, it would have been detected earlier. However, sometimes by the time the first symptoms present, it is at a later stage." Thank you so much for sharing that, and thank you for sharing your story. Dr. Mark Garnick is a renowned expert in medical oncology and urologic cancer at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston and professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. Dr. Benjamin Mazur is board-certified anatomic and clinical pathologist, assistant professor of pathology at Johns Hopkins University. Thank you both for your work, and thank you so much for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.